Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! I'm Zach Birchie. Justin's here.
Hey, everyone.
And a very special returning guest, the president of Right Stuff. It's Sean Kleckner. Sean, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Yeah, no problem at all. Glad to talk to you guys again.
It's great to have you back. So, obviously, we got to start with the obvious question. How's it going, retail-wise?
Well, we're starting to see some pickup for the holidays, which is pretty much what I expect. You know, the holiday stuff starts off slow in the first portion of November, and then starts pushing further and further towards the sky as we get closer and closer to the Cyber Monday and Black Friday holiday periods. So definitely seeing some pickup, especially in Blu-ray stuff this year. Really excited about that.
So is Blu-ray over the 50% threshold now as far as video game sales?
No, I wouldn't say that.
No.
Well, but it's definitely built. I mean, I'm seeing much more Blu-ray, and there's more availability of Blu-ray, obviously, than there has been, in years past. And there's much more Blu-ray product in our category than there ever has been. I don't know if we want to attribute that to, the Japanese finally letting loose and letting us put Blu-rays out, or just the holdbacks expiring or whatever. But the fact is there is more Blu-ray content, and a lot of it is more native Blu-ray and not upscaled like some of the previous ones have been.
Right. So, are dubs having as big an impact as they used to, or is it pretty much even now as far as like how much a dub release sells, how much a sub only release sells? It's hard to gauge how much a difference a dub makes these days.
That's a kind of a tough question to answer. I mean, a lot of it will be the popularity of the program. I mean, there are several subtitled programs that are available recently that have done very, very well, even without a dub. But to reach the mass market products, I mean, if you want to go out and have your product at the brick and mortar chains or have it be something that's going to be one of the best seller titles, obviously you're going to have a dub that's going to be necessary for that. It does put the stuff that's not dubbed into a little more of a niche category or an internet only or, very limited availability outside of the internet merchants like us.
Has there been anything where you actually, aside from looking at the bigger picture, any recent releases where just out of Nozomi stuff, where you really sat up and took notice and said, holy cow, I can't believe this is doing so well?
Well, I mean, one thing that really kind of surprised me, I'll give you one specific example, is I've been watching this Lane DVD Blu-ray combo pack just really explode. Yeah. And from a title that's a little bit older, that's had a previous release, I mean, that's pretty exciting. And it's a higher price point title as well.
Yeah, that's one of those shows where I feel like it always kind of in demand, but the market was completely starved for it for years and years and years. So it's kind of exciting to know that at least that theory holds that, these really popular shows from the late 90s and early 2000s, that have been sort of starved and cut off from the market, coming back, it's a big deal. Kind of like...
Well, the Hellsings are the same way. I mean, the Hellsing Ultimates, especially with, there was only a couple of those that made it out before Genion's demise, but now that these are being re-released in the market again, I mean, I think people have been really, wanting to have those products for a period of time, and there's been a real pent-up demand for them, and I've seen those doing really, really well. So... I do agree with you. It is some of this stuff may be demand that's pent up. Some of it may just be the type of product. I mean, Hellsing and the vampire titles always do well.
Right.
But certainly to see them do as well as they are doing is a positive sign for some of the industry watchers that have the gloom and doom that says that DVDs don't sell or Blu-rays don't sell anymore.
Yeah, which I would imagine you would disagree with that.
Yeah, I would disagree with that. every year everybody tells me, well, this will be the last year you're selling because, everybody's going to go to digital and nobody will buy DVDs anymore, and we sell more DVDs than ever. So there's definitely, continued demand for packaged goods. I mean, there are customers that will provide or will only want to watch the product on a digital form. There's some that only watch it on a packaged media form. There's some that buy after they sample one or the other. I just don't think that to catch all be all that we're going to move to a digital platform and there's going to be no PAX Media sales ever again. I just don't see that happening. Now, you know, that being said, you know, the package media sales as a whole, I think, for, you know, the entire video industry, not just anime, are in decline. I think part of that is a function of the fact that there is so much packaged media out there that people pick and choose. And if you have 10 titles and that's all there are in the whole market, there's going to be a certain number of sales that those 10 titles will achieve. Well, now when you exponentially move that up to 10,000, 100,000, a million titles, well, you know, the amount of buyers for each one of the individual titles drops off substantially. So I don't know that the function of the anime DVDs dropping down is specifically only because, you know, they're digital markets. I think it comes down to there's a lot of competition for, you know, the consumer's attention and their dollars at this point.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, but based on what you were saying, it sounds like this over the last year since we last talked to you, it's been a growth year.
And that's for us.
Well, for you.
I don't know if you want to look at it as an industry growth piece. I mean, I think we are benefiting from the fact that the scarcity of the product at retail. But at the same time, I don't think that I'm not hearing when I talk to, you know, industry people that their sales as a whole are down. I think what I'm hearing is that it's more difficult to get the customer the product that they're looking for.
Right, specifically because of the lack of retail space.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there used to be a whole aisle of this stuff at Best Buy, and now there's a 4-foot shelf.
Yeah. Kind of leaving money on the table a little bit, it sounds like.
Well, I'm not a big fan of Best Buy's strategy when it comes to, you know, packaged media. I just don't understand the concept of the way that they're going, but that's probably a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anyone is a fan of any of Best Buy's anything right now.
Yeah. But you mentioned the holidays and Black Friday coming up, and I wanted to get your take on this because Black Friday has become this month-long thing where basically the entire month of November, most major, especially internet retailers like Amazon and Newegg, they're running specials constantly throughout the month. And I'm wondering, is your strategy still focused entirely on the one day or the one weekend, or are you considering expanding out like some of these other retailers have?
You know, it is interesting to watch that. I mean, I've seen more and more of this whole Black November. I saw stuff come through that was, you know, Black Fall. You get to a point where you wonder is it going to be Black January starting, you know, at the beginning of the year and run through Black December.
Right.
In terms of some of this, I think it comes down to people are so desperate to get somebody's attention. There's so much competition in the market for, you know, whether it be, you know, a shopping dollar as a whole, not necessarily just, you know, DVDs and Blu-rays and manga and the stuff that we sell. It's how do I get ahead of the other guy? You know, and I saw there's been quite a bit of discussion on this on a lot of the social media networks over the course of the last month about all these people now going to be open. The last year's trend was we were going to be open at midnight on Thanksgiving, you know, after Thanksgiving Day. Now we're going to be open at 9 o'clock p.m. on Thanksgiving Day itself. At some point, are we just going to be open Thanksgiving Day?
Right.
Entirely. I do think that it comes down to being a function of people trying to grab that attention, and they feel like, if we push this earlier, the customers will buy from us because they can get that deal right away. Now, I think that there's going to be a limitation of returns of that strategy. You can have Black November, but that doesn't mean people are ready to buy on November 1st.
Mm-hmm.
We did happen to switch back our Black. We didn't last year. We did just Black Friday. We started the day before Thanksgiving. This year we started the week before Thanksgiving, just as a change up to see what the difference would really be. And, you know, to a point, you see a sales uptick that's there, but I personally feel what's going to happen is people are going to wait till the same, you know, strategy they had before. It may be the day of or the day before Thanksgiving, or most likely it's going to be back to the Cyber Monday concept again.
Yeah, which I guess is still a thing, although Amazon is doing the ridiculous month-long deals on everything. But yeah, I guess that Cyber Monday thing still happens.
Well, that's because people are doing their shopping at work.
Oh, right.
Well, and that is very true. People do shop at work. I mean, you do see that in terms of, you know, you can watch your analytics trends and see what, when your shopping traffic comes to site. It's kind of interesting to see, you know, what times of day, you know, our traffic is heaviest. The fact is, though, that if people aren't ready to let loose and say, I'm ready to go shopping, then they're not going to shop. Well, it doesn't make any difference if I'm selling everything for 50 cents. If they're not ready to buy, they're not going to buy. So I think that, you know, although people will continue to push this thing forward, I just think there's going to be a de minimis of the amount of return that they're going to get from that. And the majority of the sales are still going to happen probably the day before Thanksgiving, through the following week, just like they have been, you know, back since retail was, you know, invented this whole Black Friday concept.
Right. And in your business specifically, so like your chief, I would imagine at this point, your chief competitor is Amazon.
You know, it'd be difficult to say that. I mean, anybody that sells DVD is going to be a competitor for us.
Right.
But I mean, I would, you know, Amazon is always the big behemoth in the room simply because they're the largest. I don't think that Amazon focuses on anime the same way that the specialty retailers do, but
obviously,
certainly we pay attention to what Amazon does.
Right. But I guess my point was like, as a specialty retailer, their almost total lack of focus on anime. I mean, they're not going to be having a huge Black Friday sale on anime specifically that would directly mm-hmm. compete with you. Like as a specialty retailer, that's a strength that you have. That allows,
well,
you know,
I mean, a focus on a specific product category is always important if you're trying to sell to a specific audience.
Well,
you know, it is interesting to watch, though. I mean, the fact is that our goal is to get people to buy packaged media products. I mean, that's what we sell. And, you know, I think that, you know, our people have done an amazing job this year in prepping and putting together everything for our sale. I mean, we launched a whole new search algorithm piece that's on the website now that people can search and get much better results than they have been able to in the past. And our IT group really did a bang up job making that happen. And I think that's going to be a big plus for us. And you know, we've added little games like our Otaku Builder where you can come and build a character and send a card and save the character and so on. Which I think is fun and can give people something to do when they visit the site. And you add all that to the various multi-platform marketing and social media stuff, I'm really hoping we'll have a good season.
I'm noticing that you have the are you doing the 12 days of Christmas thing again?
Well, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be something that will happen towards the end of the month like every other year.
Okay. Well, I'm just noticing that this new thing you're doing, the run-up to Black Friday, is this, you know, three waves of sales. And mm-hmm. I was wondering, is, you know, a lot of this stuff is, like, really, really back catalog stuff. And I was wondering if when you're cutting these prices this much, do people just buy them just to see what they are at this point? I mean, because here you got Empty Geist for $2.99. I mean, almost worth it.
Well, I'm almost positive that you probably picked that up, haven't you already?
No comment.
No comment. Well, here's the fact. You know, Deep Catalog is usually a target for sales like this. I mean, it doesn't make any difference if it's us or it's anybody else. And, you know, the fact is that any new release-driven business like ours, catalog stuff kind of gets set by the wayside and people forget about some of these titles. And, you know, I've been kind of amused watching some of the various social media sites talking about, oh, I didn't even know that was available, or, hey, I'm going to pick this up because it is a couple of dollars. So, I mean, it almost becomes like a sampler or whatever, and it gives somebody, if they want, they're trying to pad their order out for free shipping or something, that's another option for them as well.
I just can't believe how much old CPM crap you still have.
Well, I tend to be the master of finding lost caches of product. You know, it's kind of like that deal at the in Indiana Jones when they're putting the lost Ark of the Covenant in the warehouse. That's kind of what it looks like here.
Must be nice to have a huge warehouse that you own.
Now I'm imagining them opening the Ark at the end of that movie in Empty Geist.
Now that would be interesting.
So, have you noticed any shift in demographic in terms of your consumer base over the last year? Any changes there?
Demographic shifts. We're still seeing more and more females into the market, which I think is pretty neat. The fact is that, that shift has been something that's been happening for a while, but we're seeing more and more shift towards more of a 50-50 market than we've had in years. And I don't know if it's just the type of products that are coming out or if it's, more book sales or what the reason for that is. I think that a lot of the female audience has been forced online because of the large book chains going out of business. But demographic wise, I mean, we study that pretty heavily, and we do see that shift is kind of interesting.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're seeing more of a 50-50 split in terms of the male-female demographic. Did that have any influence on your decision to go into the manga publishing business or the manga printing business, as it is?
Not really. That wasn't the whole impetus behind our on-demand program. I mean, the concept there was if we would go to the publisher and try to buy these books so that we could fill orders for the customers, but number four of the series would not be there.
Right.
And, there's nothing that kills a series faster than not being able to, who's going to start a new series if you can't get the volumes in the middle, if you go and find them from a scalper for $60. So, I mean, we have tried to push, and working with a lot of the publishers, look, if you don't have these things in print, you've essentially killed your entire SKU. I mean, in terms of not only have you killed volume 4, but you've killed 1 through 26 as well, because the only people that are going to buy the ones after number 4 are the people who already have the first 4. So, I mean, the concept of the on-demand publishing piece that we've been looking to do was primarily to fill that need, that and the fact that, there's a lot of good stuff that wasn't getting put out, or that the series had been abruptly ended because the sales just didn't warrant putting titles out at printing runs that are large enough to make it economical. We want to be able to say, well, look, if we can make this more economical because we can work directly with the fans, which allows us to have a little bit of extra dollars there to pass back to the licensor or to the publisher or the manga car or whatever, can we make this a viable business in a slightly different fashion for those products that have either not been available or that did never get finished?
Well, and, speaking of the demographic change, like, that is a naturally more female market to begin with, like manga.
Yeah, that's very, very true.
So, and how overall is that performing? Is that exceeding expectations? How's it going for you?
It's actually done pretty well. I've been very happy with the titles that we've put out. I obviously would like to add more titles to that mix, but finding that the publishing business is even more messy than the video business on the licensing side, especially when it comes to new technologies, is putting things on a slow path rather than the fast path that I would like it to be on. There's a lot more concern or question or not misunderstandings when it comes to how digital works with those people. You're finally seeing digital on the manga side now. But then you come back to them and say, well, now what we want to do is take this and we want to print it one at a time. And they just scratch their heads and say, huh? Well, that's a whole different license. You need to pay another guarantee for that. Well, there's no guarantee if I'm printing one. So it just becomes a little bit more of a challenge to figure out how to make that business process and that concept of how can we bring these titles to market to the end customers a little bit more difficult in terms of the working with these vendors.
There have been a couple bigger companies, obviously Amazon with CreateSpace, but also Warner Archives have been doing a lot of DVD on demand lately. Is that something that you have your ear to the ground on, might look to do similarly with anime?
In terms of actual DVD on demand, is that what you're asking, Justin?
Yes.
Probably not yet. I mean, I'm obviously watching that space. I mean, I remember working with that when the Imagination stuff came out.
Right.
I still question whether it would be better to, I mean, DVD replication is so inexpensive that sometimes it's more cost effective to just press. But it's something that obviously we have our eye on because, there is that technology, and if we get into a position where we can't do the other effectively, then we have to explore whether that might be the opportunity for us to continue to keep product in print.
Well, with that, with the DVD on demand thing, it's a little bit less of because it seems like the manga initiative was there to solve that very specific problem that you're talking about, where it's got this one volume out of print, and then suddenly you can sell your on-hand physical stock that, all those you still have plenty of copies of, but you didn't have volume 6. It seems like that would be less of an issue with anime, because if you're going to print something, you print the whole series again. You don't go back and print, back when single releases were common, you're printing volume 3 of ADV's original Nadesco release,
I would agree with you. I mean, and that's one of the reasons why we really haven't pushed real hard into that space, because the anime business has moved more to a box set type category. Yeah. And if you're going to print one, you're going to print it all. The thing that I'm seeing more in terms of that when I work with the publishers in the market on this is not an issue of we can't print the disc. It's we run out of packaging. And if, especially if it's a specialty packaging thing where you've got a real nice hard carton or something like that, to go back and put things on a press, if it has a specialty item like a book or something, like, you know, the NIS releases that we do really well with those. But I certainly can understand why, if they exhaust those, why they don't go back and say, well, we're just going to print another batch of them. That printing those books and the cartons are just unbelievably expensive in small quantities.
I would imagine people would not necessarily expect to get all the LE items if they're buying something on demand just to have a physical copy of it. But I know, mm-hmm. maybe I'm mistaken about what customers would actually find reasonable to demand from a service like that.
Well, the other thing that you run into is the on-demand services are generally done on a DVD-R type platform where it's a rewritable disc, and people are concerned about whether it will last. I mean, if I put a book out on demand, it's still printed on paper, mm-hmm. and people know how long paper lasts.
It'll be interesting to see if eventually the market spurns you to move into that that field. But that, interestingly, that sort of dovetails in with what we wanted to talk about next, which is Nozomi, which obviously has had kind of a big year this year. You announced a couple new labels at Anime Expo, and so we're seeing those releases actually come out at this point, right? The Lucky Penny and the
our 5 Points Pictures label.
Yes, 5 Points Pictures. Right. Sorry about that. So obviously, we're starting to see some of those releases come out. How's it going so far with that stuff?
Well, I mean, we've only just released the first of the Lucky Penny titles, which was Restaurante Paradiso.
Right.
And I've been very pleased with how that's performed thus far. I mean, the concept here was how do we differentiate the types of products that we're putting out? Some titles that we would look at in the market in terms of acquisitions really didn't justify putting out one of these really high-end limited edition versions with the fancy box and the 200-page book and so on and so forth. But if I put those out on the Nozomi label, do people get upset because they did not receive what they expected based on previous purchases in that category? So what we did is we tried to split that down between this is our Ultra Primo label, our Nozomi label, and this is our label for normal releases, not necessarily, titles that we don't think are any good by any means, because I don't think that's the case at all, but that maybe we went to the licensor and there were no extra materials. There was a lack of additional artwork or, various reasons that we would put on that label rather than on the Nozomi label. So the goal there was to separate those pieces out so that we could kind of broaden out the type of products that we would license, to broaden out the ability for us to get into slightly different genres, the titles that we put in the past as well. And then the 5 Points label, obviously, we separate that out because it's live-action product.
Right, yeah. And that selection process for live-action, what is that like? I mean, how are you picking and choosing what you're actually going to pick up for that label?
That's kind of a difficult thing to answer. I mean, it's the live action stuff is different, obviously, in the way that you license it versus anime. I mean, anime has its own unique and interesting licensing challenges, and the stuff on the other side, the live action product, it's much more into music clearances and video clearances and synchronization licenses and so on and so forth. What we were kind of trying to look at there was what are the type of titles that really haven't been brought over on the live-action titles. I mean, there's been live-action titles on the Japanese side and the Korean side that have been brought over before. Most of those titles have been either heavy-duty action flicks or blood and gore flicks or, the samurai films, for example. But the other types of titles, your dramatic titles, romances, that type of stuff, nobody has really touched that stuff. And I know there's a demand for it. So that was kind of the direction that we went with these things. So what is it that we're not seeing from everybody else in a kind of a contrarian strategy that is a market that needs to be served?
Do you think that that's a result of, the companies that are licensing live-action movies? When you get Funimation obviously focuses on the samurai stuff, and then, Sentai had that label for a little while. I don't know if it's still in existence, the Switchblade, where it was all just, the gory stuff.
Or boob movies.
Yeah, right. Or both. Yeah, typically both. Do you think that that's just the result of them focusing too much on what they think an anime, they think their demographic actually wants, like what anime fans would want. So samurai action, gore, tits, that kind of stuff. Do you think that that's just a result of that? That's why they never bothered with any drama or comedy or any of the stuff that you're talking about getting into?
Well, I think there's no history for that. I think that's the big issue. I mean, if you look at what has been put out in the past, it's almost all the gore, the titles that you kind of mentioned there. So it's safe.
Right.
If I'm going to buy a samurai film, I kind of have a feel for what samurai films have done here in the United States before. I have a feel for, you know, what kind of films the slasher stuff does. I mean, there's a demographic for each of those. Now, keep in mind that the stuff we're talking about, you know, some of this dramatic stuff, although we picked up a couple of action titles and others and kind of made it a little bit more of a broad mix with Moss and Taja, but the fact is that you're looking at more of that mixed demographic again. You're talking about a romantic comedy. You got to bring the females into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you get those customers to buy DVDs? Because generally they're not the DVD buyers that the males are. So, I mean, I think I would agree with you in some points that some of it is the, you know, this is what we know sells because this is the stuff we sell on the anime side. I think some of it is a degree of we're just not sure what about this type of product, and we don't want to chance it. And, you know, I think the rest of it is how we don't know how to market that. So how do we market it? We're going to focus directly on that type of stuff. And I want to have a mix. I don't want to sell just romantic comedies and that kind of stuff. We have some really great stuff coming up next year that I'm kind of excited about. And it's a very, you know, eclectic mix. I mean, there's drama, there's comedy, there's horror, there's all kinds of different things in that mix that, you know, to kind of give everyone it's something different, but not the same type of stuff that has been out there before. Bleak, for example, I think our January release is really an interesting film, and I think people will really like that. But, you know, we were looking for something that was a market that really wasn't being served, I think was the focus where we were on in terms of the 5-point stuff.
How do you get word out for stuff like that? Because, you know, unlike the very, you know, rigid genres, you know, like horror and anime, frankly, there's not a whole lot of media and internet framework for just people who like good foreign movies.
I would agree with that. certainly a much more complicated process to get the word out on these. I know our marketing folks have struggled with that and just trying to get the information into people's hands. But, you know, I also know that they've identified a number of places where that we can, you know, highlight our products. And I think that that's where we're getting some traction. We're able to hit a lot of the various, you know, markets that carry foreign films, whether it be the video stores or the specialty stores, the internet online retailers. You know, even rental outlets. I mean, we've done pretty well with those as well.
Are you making a push with these towards, you know, like cable VOD and other markets that sort of, because foreign films have more kind of gravitated away from physical media, much more so than anime in the last few years?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, obviously we have that component of our business as well. So, I mean, we have to put that on those. I mean, I think that a number of our titles on this category are available on Netflix and a couple other places too. So it is the double challenge of not only being the foreign film, but not being in English and having subtitles. It makes it somewhat difficult to convince somebody to give things a shot. But the ones that I've seen the comments coming back in terms of the titles that we put out, that people are very, very happy with the way that they're done, that they like the translation. They like the fact that we give them a couple of different options. Some people don't like yellow subtitles, so we give them the ability to watch it with white subtitles. We provide a lot of extra material with these that's not available, you know, unless you were to buy a foreign release and watch it in that language. So I think that that's been a big plus for us in order to just kind of get an extra value for people when they purchase.
And have you been reaching out to, you know, standard sort of movie blogs, you know, places that actually do cover, you know, relatively obscure foreign stuff. Has that been part of your strategy in terms of getting this stuff actually noticed by a larger, you know, portion other than people who are already paying attention to what your company is doing by virtue of being anime fans?
Well, I mean, and there's only a subset of people that are anime fans that are willing to be foreign film fans at the same time. I mean, sure, Justin can say that you know, with some surety, but the fact is we're touching every one of these places that we possibly can. And the thing is, it's kind of an organic growth. When you start with one title, you don't get a lot of attention. and now they're up to 3 and 4. You know, then you know we're getting noticed by more and more people, and when we have a library of 6, we're going to have another kind of breakthrough that we'll be able to get to another group of people that we can have look at the titles, and we have the library has to grow, and the library of the stuff that we're looking at is so unused, different than the libraries that other people have with the samurai films and the slasher films and that type of stuff, that it's that much more effort that we need to go and say, well, look, this is a library of different types of titles, let's give one of these a look and see what you think. But I think that's been one of our challenges, is just the fact that we have to start from essentially from scratch and get the word out as we get a larger and larger library of these titles actually into the field.
Wow. Okay, so obviously we have to talk about Rose of Versailles. This was a huge announcement earlier this year. Considered sort of a, like, holy cow, how did he manage that moment? Because for years, Justin and I have been talked about it on this show. Like, that show is apparently really, really tough to get the license to. And, while I'm sure you won't give us the gory details, can you give us an outline of what that process was like?
Well, you can go back a lot of years. I started working on this, 8 or 9 years ago. It comes down to having some patience and working with people and a number of different meetings and just hard work. I mean, it's hard to say. I guess it's not hard to say. I know the reasons, but there's a lot of reasons why this has not been available. Certainly, I would have liked to have put it out in the early 2000s when I started working on it, but the fact was that the licensor and the people behind the scenes and the other people that were all involved in this product apparently just weren't ready for that to be a process that was going to happen at that point. So really I think perseverance is the only piece that I can say that actually made that happen.
Wow, 10 years. So do you feel like now, potentially given, the way the market has changed, because obviously the market is a totally different beast now from what it was 10 years ago, do you feel like, and after a decade of manga bloggers, slobbering all over Rose of Versailles and basically 10 years of people treating it like the Holy Grail, do you think that helped? Do you think now is a better time to release this show than it would have been 10 years ago?
Oh, I don't know. I think it would have been better to release it 10 years ago because the market was completely different at that point. But
well, yeah,
the fact
sure.
is that, there is the fact that it has been in customer in the people's minds for that long of a period certainly is not bad at all. I mean, I think that that's a great thing. People haven't forgotten about it. They still want it. There's still a sizable pent-up demand for this product. And, it's a great show. I'm really looking forward to putting that out on DVD next year. That we put up the first episode so people can get a sample for it, and it's going to stream starting in December on Viki, and then we'll have the disc sets come out last part of spring next year. So I think that there's definitely an advantage to the fact that that's been in people's minds for so long. I do think that there's an evangelistic feel to those particular individuals, which will help because then they can go out and tell people, hey, this was great, and I've been waiting for it forever. Why don't you share it with me? I just think that the customers as a whole are going to be really happy with this release, and I'm really excited about finally being able to put the thing out. I mean, it's been a lot of work.
I mean, are there any other? I mean, obviously that was something of a holy grail to you too, just to release. Is there anything else on that list of shows that you would just love to put out that people consider to be under lock and key?
Well, on the other announcement that we made recently was the Princess Knight release for the English series that was put out in the late 60s. I mean, that's another one that I've been working on for years and years and years and years and years. It just seems like some of the plans are finally coming to fruition in 2012. I mean, I don't know if it's because the world's going to end here in a month and I don't ever get to do the work or what, but... the fact is that that was one that I've been trying to put together since back when we originally were working on the original Tezuka stuff that we started the company with, the Astro Boys and the Kimbas and so on. There are other titles obviously in that same kind of thought process that I would love to have and love to give and share with the fans. And I do think you're going to see some of those come to fruition. I know that that I have at least one that I have in mind right now that I'm hoping to be able to talk about very, very soon. That's been kind of one of those under lock and key titles like you were talking about. The others, it's just going to matter whether or not we can, I suppose, convince people that the time is now right.
Cool. All right. Well, we can look forward to those announcements. So, and any major surprises in Nozomi sales? You had a bunch of new stuff come out this year. Anything that really blew the doors off or...
or fell on its face.
Or fell on its face. You know, we'd like to hear about that stuff too.
I don't really think I've got anything that I can say fell on its face. In terms of this year, I've been super excited about the, you know, kind of bringing back the Dirty Pair stuff. I mean, that was one of the big things I was excited about over the last couple of years. We were able to pull that Dirty Pair TV series out and get it out to the customers. That'd been one thing. Another title that had been kind of in limbo for many, many years. And then to just kind of take that on and bring back the other parts of that series was really kind of exciting, and that's done very, very well for us. You know, beyond that, I'm trying to think of what, you know, I know that I've been real happy with how Nudesco has performed. I think that we did a really good job with the re-release on that and adding in the OVA that had never been available here.
Now see, that surprised me because, you know, when ADV was having their troubles a few years ago, they were blowing those box sets out for so cheap, and I was curious when you licensed it. I was like, are there still people that don't have this that want it?
I think people, the big number one thing that I had saw when we were looking at that title was we didn't like the video quality. We just didn't think that the video was any good. So that was one of the things we tried to focus on mostly with that release. I mean, it had gotten a remaster over in Japan, and we were able to secure the access to that material. And I think that was, you know, part of it. But the other thing that you got to keep in mind, that had been out of print for quite a while. And I'm finding that these customers that are buying, you know, there's new people coming into our market every day. They're always, you know, somebody who comes in and they're like, well, geez, you know, I really love Sea Control and I bought that and now I'm not sure what I want to buy. Or I've got into Aria the Scarlet Ammo and I thought that was really cool because somebody, you know, showed me this anime stuff I'd never seen before and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. So for those customers, all of this catalog stuff is brand new. You know, they've never seen any of it. So I want to be able to market to those customers and say, look, yeah, check all what anime is all about. There's a lot more to the anime than just these brand new releases that come out every single month. And, you know, I think that as a whole, that's how our market continues to grow, is being able to continually add new customers into that. I mean, we have customers that are in their 40s and 50s. We have customers that are in their teens. I mean, it was really kind of interesting to watch the generations of anime fans grow up. I mean, when you look at it, the college age students, the students that are a little older, or the people that are just out of college now, those are the Dragon Ball fans. You know, those are the people that watched Dragon Ball when they grew up. Mm-hmm. They're the Sailor Moon people. They're the Pokemon people.
Holy crap, we're old.
You know, the rest of us that don't have hair anymore, I mean, we're wanting to watch Dirty Pair TV, you know? So, I mean, I think that you'd be surprised. I mean, there's still life on a lot of these titles. I mean, you still see people going back to the catalog, and I see a lot of, you know, one of the bigger sellers in the last few months has been Black Lagoon. That's a re-release.
Yeah, I mean, Justin, you were talking about those Nadesco box sets, like, yeah, that ADV set sucked. Like, I wouldn't.
I haven't popped it in forever. I kind of forgot.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So, like, and that remaster, you know, they did a really nice job with that. So it didn't necessarily surprise me. But that is, you know, I would imagine that you looked at the sales numbers for that before deciding to license it and figured that, okay, we can still sell this.
Well, you can look at the sales numbers, but you also have to kind of look at what is it people are wanting to buy. I mean, it's kind of a two-pronged attack. What is out there to license, and what do people want to buy, regardless of whether it's new or old? You know, if you go back and look at a lot of the older DVDs, you go back to those late 90s DVDs that I'm sure Justin is very familiar with, some of them were really, really bad. And would the customer, if, you know, even old, you know, old people like myself, would they go back and rebuy some of these titles if they could get a title that looked decent and it wasn't all washed out and didn't have, you know, super bad cross colorization and dot crawl and everything else, I think some of them would. I don't know that everybody will, but you know, at the same time, you also look at these fans that have no idea what these shows are. I mean, is MD Geist, ready to be introduced to a new generation? There's the question.
I argue yes.
So going back to Rose of Versailles for a little bit here and Princess Knight. So these sort of came one right after the other. And, you know, we've talked about certainly how we didn't know whether or not there's really a market for that older stuff. You know, you're talking about Princess Knight was what, 70s?
Princess Knight was late 60s.
Late 60s.
And then it was syndicated through the 70s.
Right. And then Rose of Versailles, obviously the 70s.
Right.
So going back that far, is there any second guessing like, well, this is really old, like... Or are you relying on the whole, like, well, people get reintroduced to this stuff every day?
Well, I mean, you have to also take into account that this is very old.
Right.
sometimes you run into materials issues because this is very old.
Yeah.
That's going to be another, you know, prime concern that you're going to have to look at. Is there access to materials? Is the license even going to be possible based on being able to get artwork and such? I mean, there's been a couple titles that we've been pretty close to being able to put together, but when we go to the licensor, they literally cannot provide us with anything. So it's really kind of difficult to put a release out with nothing. There's also the fact that when you get into some of the older products, there's a significantly different style than there is today. And some people are turned off by that style. You know, the cell animation is much different than the CG stuff that's put out today on pretty much everything. Sometimes I kind of look at it as, you know, who are we selling these products? Are we selling these products to the younger crowd? Yes, no. Can we get some crossover? Possibly. Are we only selling these products to the crowd of people that grew up with anime when they were younger, when they were growing up in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s? So sometimes there is going to be some level of segmentation there, and you'll have to make a decision. Can you sell enough units to those people? Sometimes we have discussions in our in the office here, and we talk about some of the older people, and we talk about them being the people that remember what it was like to buy. It's difficult to know who's going to buy certain products. You can make a very, very good guess, but I think that there's definitely a market for the classic stuff, and I think that there's definitely people that are willing to buy that. I mean, we're not the only group of people that are looking at some of these older titles. I know there's other licensors that are licensees, and Discotech's brought out a lot of really neat older stuff, just as a one example. I do think there's a market for it. Now, is it going to sell the kind of units that one of these brand-new titles sells? Probably not.
Right.
So that means you have to look at, there's a lot more budgeting and accounting that has to be done in your brain here to say, well, is this going to be worth our time? Are we going to be able to recoup our cost on it? You know, if it's got this many episodes and we got to translate all of them, is enough people going to buy it to at least make it so we can pay for the license? It does become a lot tougher with the older titles to do those type of calculations than the new stuff.
Right. And I would imagine that in general, the print runs are lower.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. You're not printing tens of thousands of these things.
I could wish. That would be nice. But at the same time, I don't need to run tens of thousands of them. If we're able to work the deal in such a way that everybody wins, it doesn't make any difference.
All right. Okay. Justin, anything before we get to Twitter?
No, let's do Twitter.
Okay. All right.
I'm looking forward to these.
Okay. We got a bunch of questions from your fans and well-wishers and some ne'er-do-wells on Twitter. First up from Zero Chan and approximately 800 million other people, they want to know about the Utena Blu-rays that are coming out in Japan and whether or not you're even looking at them.
I'm aware of the Utena Blu-rays. I'm not sure what we're going to do with that yet. Utena has done very, very well for us. I think that everybody I've talked to has really liked the sets that we've put together. Again, it's going to come down to, is there going to be enough sales to warrant the cost of the keys and the authoring and everything else that puts together on a long series like that? We certainly are looking more and more at Blu-ray every month. Is that something that we want to be in? Is it going to be cost effective? You really have to be careful with some of these shows that are more niche oriented, like that we're getting into. They are, it is pretty darned expensive still to do Blu-ray authoring and replication. It's not near as inexpensive as it is to do DVD. And a lot of the older shows don't have materials unless we do an upscale. So, you know, there are opportunities there, and certainly I'm not going to say that we're going to rule that out forever. You know, it's going to be one of those things that we're just going to have to keep an eye on and see if we can make a market for it.
Yeah, you don't want to run into a situation like Funimation did with Dragon Ball Z, where it seemed like maybe they'd exhausted the market for Dragon Ball Blu-rays before deciding to spend all that money on re-releasing the show again on Blu-ray. And you just put those Utena DVDs out.
It's difficult to, again, a lot of it comes down to just, you know, dollars and cents. I mean, I get raked over the coals a lot of times because we don't dub certain titles and we don't put up the certain titles on Blu-ray. But at the end of the day, I got to keep the lights on, guys, and I just can't do this as a charity. I gotta turn a profit so that I can pay my people and that we can continue to bring other shows to market. And sometimes it's kind of one of those catch-22s. Do you think we can get, you know, enough sales of this with a Blu-ray? Well, if we do a Blu-ray, are we going to make enough to pay for the license? It's a tough call sometimes. And you're not going to make everybody happy all the time. I certainly know that.
But that's possible.
I mean, I can make a lot of political promises just like on the campaign trail, but that doesn't mean that it's going to make any sense to do so.
Right. Okay, Elliot Page asks, any plans to relax your requirements for international orders? As they currently stand, they are a hassle.
Oh, boy. And I've hit this a number of times, only because of the way that we have, kind of a card verification stuff set up on the front end. I mean, we ask that people who order for the first time with us that are outside of the country work with us to get a little bit more of a verification on cards, because credit cards outside of the U.S. do not have a very good authentication scheme. It's difficult to get, an auth. And it's inside the United States, but there's a lot of different systems. There's, address verification system, and there's a number of ways to get, a good feel for whether the card that you're taking is good or not. I've had customers say to me, well, you're telling us all international customers are all thieves. Well, that's not the case. I don't really feel that that's the case at all. But I will also tell you that, before we had international card verification such as we have now, the vast majority of chargebacks that we ran into were from international locations. Mm. It's just very difficult when you're a internet type merchant or what they call a card not present environment to work with customers that are outside of the country, because the card processing companies do not provide you with any real structured mechanism to do so. It's an incredibly frustrating thing, because certainly I want to get as many orders as we possibly can. I want to work with as many customers as I possibly can. But at the end of the day, just like with the other stuff that we've talked about earlier, I have to protect myself. When you take a card, essentially you're using it on faith and trust. And it's not really, unless you can get something on the back side of that to give you a little bit more faith, you gotta make a decision on whether you want to accept the order. Now, the one thing we do with that is we have a process we put in place to try to work with those customers. We verify them once, and then we don't make them do it every single order. I mean, that would be ridiculous. But we at least try to get some level of trust built up so that we don't, once we get a customer in, that we can continue to work with that customer without giving them any more difficulty.
Okay.
I wish that we had the resources of Amazon, but, in that type of area. I think it's interesting if you look through some of the Amazon reports in terms of fraud and that kind of stuff, how much, even they spend on cards that are, that are bad.
All right. Zisha Smith asks, how do people usually find Right Stuff? What's your biggest source of discovery? Is it just advertising?
I don't know that right off the top of my head. I mean, we have a number of entry points, whether it be referrals from, other websites through, organic search results. We market in magazine advertisements. We do a lot of interesting marketing. I mean, we've got ads running on Neon Alley even at this point. So I would say probably organic search results from search engines and stuff is probably going to be number one. But we do get a lot of business just from repeat customer referrals from, customers that are happy with what we do for them, for our packaging or for the pricing that we provide or whatever.
Another question about international shipping from Ikari Gendo. He asks, recently your international shipping rates went way, way up. Lucky Penny Line has great titles, but $13.50 to ship it, it's not really a great value for us anymore. Any luck or progress finding an economy option?
Well, we're looking at a number of options right now to try to come up with a solution for that. I mean, I know that people were really upset about that. I tried to go around the forums and address people's concerns when we did raise our shipping rates here last catalog cycle. But you know, we'd absorbed three shipping rate increases in a row. And it was getting to the point where we were losing so much money on this freight that it just didn't make any sense. International shipping, especially, is expensive. I know that there are people who feel that they can, well, I can ship this DVD for nothing, and it's just not the case. I mean, it does cost money to ship these products to around the world, and we have to at least recover some of that cost. We do not make any money at all on international shipping. It is a loss for us. But I know we had to raise some of those rates after getting hit with multiple shipping rate increases. You know, and then you add the fuel surcharges and everything else on top of that. Now, we did add package tracking, and I think that was helpful. But I understand that a lot of customers, their prime concern really doesn't make any difference on how quick it gets to them. It's, you know, how much dollars it is that it costs them. And you know, I sympathize with that, and I understand it. But you know, at the same time, you know, I can only do so much. I mean, I know that there was an issue people were unhappy because we raised the free shipping rate to Canada. Well, I challenge you to find anybody who provides a free shipping rate to Canada at all, besides us. Hmm. You know, we're trying to provide that, but you know, in order to absorb that free shipping, as people probably need to understand, comes from the margin that people make on product. It isn't because the shipping itself is actually free. You know, UPS or the post office isn't giving us free shipping. It does cost money. So if I sell everything at essentially a low margin and give free shipping away on top of that, well, there has to be enough margin in the discs that we sell to cover the cost of the shipping and a small profit for us, or we lose money on the order. So when you are selling things at a lower price and you deal with those other pieces, sometimes, especially for free shipping, you have to raise those prices. Domestic customers are pretty spoiled because of the media rate. I mean, you just can't beat media mail. I mean, it's so inexpensive.
Yeah.
But I don't know even know how long that's going to last, especially I saw the post office announce a $16 billion loss this last year. So, I mean, I'm going to guess shipping rates are going to start going up there as well.
Well, we'll see. All right, NeoCloud9 asks, which came first, the idea to create the Lucky Penny brand or the desire to license shows like Sweet Blue Flowers?
I would say probably the desire to license the shows, and then we at that point needed to figure out how did we present those shows. I mean, Sweet Blue Flowers is a great example. I mean, it's a wonderful show, but the materials for it are very, very limited. Even the Japanese materials are incredibly limited on that title. So we had to come up with a way that we could put these products into the market and still be able to present them in a way that we felt the customers would be willing to pay for them.
Okay. Itoju asks, how fast have you seen your stock of Bandai titles go? Have there been big spikes, or is there steady demand until they're gone?
Once we put counters on things, the demand went up quite a bit. You know, we did buy in quite a bit of Bandai product, and we do have quite a bit still left. But, you know, the fact was Bandai has not been making product for many months, and there's only so much of that product in the market. And, you know, short of jacking the price way up, which I'm not willing to do, you know, we're going to sell it and try to get it to as many people as we possibly can until we run out of it. You know, demand has been pretty steady ever since Bandai made their announcement that they were going to stop selling products here in the United States. But it definitely has gone up as we've got closer to the holidays. And because we were concerned that we get a lot of, you know, the website traffic goes up substantially, you know, this time of year, we didn't want to get people into a position where they would buy a product that we couldn't fill. Now, we're supposedly still getting some additional product that we have not yet got. So there is possibility that some of those titles may come back, you know, with additional counters on them, where we'll have product in and we'll put it back in and take care of the customers that we have that have ordered it, as well as new people if there's more that we can sell. But I think you're getting down to the last of the last. You know, I was told that our final Bandai shipment is already done. There's not going to be any more product. You know, they haven't replicated product for ages. There are a number of these titles which are completely and totally out of print. Now, I would be willing to bet you will see a number of those, you know, swallowed up by different parties over the course of the next year or two. Mm-hmm. But there will be a time when those titles will be only available in the secondary market.
Yeah, I'm sure Cowboy Bebop is going to stay out of print for a real long time.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, Zach, you know that it takes time. Even if somebody bought that and announced it tomorrow, it would be 6 months before you'd have it in the field.
Sure, and, you know, next month you'll see someone trying to sell it on Amazon for $800.
I always wonder if somebody actually buys that stuff. I mean, I really would like to know, does somebody spend $800 on a DVD set? I don't know. I assume somebody does, or they wouldn't put it up there, but it just seems odd.
Yeah, they must just be like, well, I'm the only person who has it, so that must mean it's worth $2,000. Like, that's... Yeah, it's a little ridiculous.
Well, it is frustrating, because keep in mind, I would like to see the title stay in print. I mean, we can't sell it to the customer if we can't get it. And the scalpers and the people that push that stuff way up in the sky, it just drives people to the piracy solutions, and I just hate to see that. It just... And that's what, you know, it is a struggle to deal with Japan on these kind of issues. I mean, they do not understand this concept. They don't understand returns. If something goes out of print, they expect people to just buy something else. They don't think, well, if somebody really wants something, you know, they're going to find a way to get it.
Yeah. And if they don't get it from you, they just type it into Google, and then second option will be piracy.
Well, I'd like to think that it's the second option. But, you know, one would hope that... that this stuff will not be, you know, we'll have some for a while, but this stuff, a lot of it is going out of print. We're running out of our allocation of it, and we're going to have to wait for it to either be re-released by another party or you know, whatever. I mean, it's going to, eventually, I think it'll be back. It's just going to be time.
All right. Big Yon Anime asks, how have the Fate Zero Blu-ray boxes been selling for you? And we actually got this question a little bit, and I think it's because people have noticed that those are not sold out, and I think everyone expected them to sell out.
We did have to replenish the first box. You probably weren't able to see it, but we did get more into those from Aniplex. But I know that, you know, like number two is down, I think 63 or something like that. So, I mean, we are getting closer to running out of some of these titles. They did not sell as strongly as Garden of Sinners, but, you know, at the same time, Garden of Sinners is a different type of product. Right. So, certainly still have sold pretty well, especially when you consider that it's an SRP $500 release.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an expensive title, and I've constantly been, you know, a little bit set back at some titles in that kind of price range. I think even with their discounts, we're in the mid fours that they sell as well as they do.
Well, that's the market. All right.
Well, there are people that want that super. I mean, essentially, I could call it the super premium release. Right. There are people that want that. It's just like there are people that buy Bugatti Veyron.
Yeah. All right. B Takeo asks, how much of a role does customer feedback play in your licensing decisions? Have there been titles you've pursued due to fan request?
There's definitely a role that's to be played from that. I mean, I try to peep my ear to the ground and hear what people are looking for or what people want. I can think of a number of titles that people there's been buzz about that I've just kind of certainly been keeping my eye out for. So I would say definitely if people have interest in licensing and or say that this is what we really want or whatever, I mean, any good business is going to pay attention to what their customers are looking for.
Okay. Land of Obscusion asks, which took longer to license, Dirty Pair TV or Princess Knight?
Princess Knight.
Right. Yeah. He said mentioned you've been working on that for a really long time. And, of course,
yeah,
he has.
I mean, the biggest issue with Princess Knight was all the Tezuka stuff back in the 1970s. Went into a real weird limbo state because the original Mushi production company that Dr. Tezuka had started went bankrupt. And a liquidator was hired at that point. And the liquidator sold various properties off to various people. And then, you know, some of these various people decided that, well, this is what they bought, but they've decided that their rights were something else. So you had people out there who said they owned things that really didn't. And there was a level of dispute on that in Japan. There's actually a significant lawsuit between the Mushi people, the Tezuka people, and a number of other parties in the early 90s that I even had to give depositions for. So it was a big, giant mess. And then at the same time as you're doing that, a lot of these titles, you know, if we want to go specifically to like Astro Boy and Kimba, were were done on limited link licenses with NBC Films. The materials were there waiting to be dealt with, and there's nobody on the other side to deal with because the company's bankrupt. That's one of the reasons why when we did those two properties, it was so difficult to deal with because a lot of the materials were actually junked because there was no money to send them back to Japan.
Right.
Wow. In terms of Princess Knight, it was even more complicated because there was a group of parties involved. There was another person that was representing licensing rights. There was a movie that was built from it, and there's a half a dozen different contracts, and it was really, really messy. So we actually had to come up with some fairly unique solutions in order to work around some of those problems. I'm actually kind of excited that we were able to finally do, but it did take some time.
Is it true that the original Japanese of Princess Knight has been lost?
No, that's not true.
Oh, okay. I was wondering then, would you ever consider bringing that out, the original Japanese version?
The question being, is there a market for the original Japanese version of a children's show from 1968?
Maybe not.
Okay, good point.
I saw that on the forums of people were saying, well, why the Japanese version is available. How come he's not putting the Japanese version out? Well, number one, the Japanese version wasn't what was put on TV here. And frankly, part of the impetus of this is more of a nostalgia play because that's the type of people that bought the Astro Boy and the Kimba materials. It's the people who watched this stuff when they were kids
and
want to share it with their kids or with their grandchildren. Certainly we're looking for ways that we can do pieces and stuff that we can put into the box set to make it interesting to everyone. For some of the Japanese content, but you have to look at the fact that these programs in this era were edited just super heavy. I mean, it was like somebody just sat there with a knife and a pair of scissors and just chop, 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 chop. Especially for violence. I mean, you have network sensors that were in there taking huge swaths of pieces out. So, I mean, you can't just do what you do today and have the English track and the Japanese track that line up and then have subtitles. It just wouldn't work. You'd essentially have to present both versions separately on the disc because otherwise you'd have big giant periods of no speaking.
Right. It would be a little awkward.
This would be a problem.
Well, it's a tough piece. I mean, it's one of those calls that you have to make. It's like, who am I selling this to? Am I selling it to anime fans or am I selling it to animation fans that watch this as kids? And I'm not trying to exclude anime fans by any means because, certainly I can appreciate the concern that's been brought forward with that. It makes sense. I get it. But at the same time, is there enough of those people who would buy that with the Japanese content in order, to justify the extra expense that it's going to cost for me to essentially go back and translate 52 episodes of Japanese scripts, double the number of discs in the set, because you'd have to present the episodes separately. I just don't know. The other side of the coin, though, is if I get enough people to say, hey, I really wanted to have this in Japanese, and I felt left out, and that's not what I'm going to buy, and hey, you suck, Kleckner, and then I suppose I'm going to have to make a decision on what we want to do with that. I mean, there's certainly options.
So what you're saying is people telling you that you suck is a really good way for you to do what they want.
Well, if people tell me that I suck, I at least take notice and ask why. I'm not necessarily going to do what they want. If that was the case, shipping would be free for everybody, and I would give DVDs away as shiny gifts to pretty much everyone I meet.
Okay. All right. Aaron Sarais asks, assuming you had infinite licensing money, what other pre-1980s anime titles would you love to have the license to?
If I had infinite money, I'd want to have them all. That's kind of a difficult question to answer. There's so many of them, and we actually are working on some of them right now, so I'd rather kind of just keep that under my hat.
Sure. Okay. A similar question from Zeruda, our friend. He asks, are you going to complete your Dirty Pair licensing odyssey by rescuing Crusher Joe?
Maybe.
All right. similar to...
There's a lot of great stuff... I'm sorry, Zach.
No, go ahead.
There's a lot of great stuff in the Sunrise Library we'd like to have.
All right.
I mean, it's just going to be a matter of whether we can make a deal work.
Similar to the Princess Knight thing, Angel XL3 asks, any chance of the French dub of Rose of Versailles being on this release?
Probably not. I would like to have done that, but the licensor, that was going to be extra money.
It would have been neat to see that.
It was pretty complicated just to get where we're at now, and going, you know, essentially going back and asking for more wasn't really cutting it.
Yeah.
So
right.
I think we're going to stick with just what we have for the moment.
Yeah.
Now we do have a couple of really neat extras that we've picked up that were there were some interviews done with Ozaki-san in France that I think we're going to be able to put on these sets that are kind of interesting. Period pieces that I think the fans will like. So those at least will, and they are actually, there's a lot of French speaking on that we'll have to probably subtitle, but in terms of the actual French track across all of them, unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's probably going to happen.
Okay. Last question from Steve Hennell asks, given your long history with Astro Boy, what do you see as the smartest way to rekindle the franchise in America?
Well, not putting out a terrible movie.
Yeah, that didn't work out so well.
Boy, that's a tough one because, I mean, this property is getting towards what, maybe 50 years, I guess, next year, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. The problem with Astro Boy as a whole is the simplicity of it, number one, and number two, the fact that it's in black and white. I find it a lot easier to introduce people into Kimba, especially for their children, than I do Astro Boy. But the part that's really kind of fascinating to me is that's kind of an adult concept. If I find some young kids and I say, hey, let's watch this show, I mean, I've actually done this a couple of times, and you know, they're all under five, and they're watching Astro Boy in black and white, they don't really care about the fact that it's in black and white. It doesn't bother them. It bothers their parents because they think it should be in color.
Hmm.
So that's kind of a strange thing when you look at kids. The kids really are more involved in the sounds and the story and the people talking and that kind of stuff than they really are in the weather, you know, the vibrancy of the colors and that type of stuff. But, you know, it's difficult. I would love nothing better than to continue to introduce new people to Astro Boy. And certainly, I know that we still sell. I mean, believe it or not, we sell quite a bit of that property to customers every day. So I know that people are trying it out. I don't know if it's all people that are older that watch it when they're kids or if they're sharing it with their kids or not, but that would be my guess, is they're probably introducing their kids to it as well.
Cool. All right. Okay, well, that actually wraps it up. Can't thank you enough for coming on and talking with us. Really appreciate it, and hope the holidays go well for you.
Well, thanks very much, guys. I always love being on the show.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Sean for coming on by. Theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating, a review. We'd appreciate it. And hey, we will see you all next week.